The NCAA tournament is almost here, which means we are entering one of the best betting days of the year. I'm Connor Allen, hosting a special episode of Move the Line. Joining me today, again, is Jason Liss from our friends over at Team Rankings and Pool Genius. Jason, has the last 24 hours so calmed down for you, or is it still going full throttle here?
You know, it's calmed down slightly. I mean, to where, you know, I've had time to go out and get a bite to eat rather than eating what's in the fridge here. So yeah, it's been good.
Yeah, no, that's important. At least you're eating now. I feel like that's a pretty good sign, right?
Can't say healthy. I went and got tacos parrilla, quesadilla at like 8 a.m. this morning. I don't think that's a good choice. But
Man, quesadilla at 8 a.m. is a wild choice. I love me some quesadilla.
I don't have any sense of what time it was, so I was like,
Yeah, no, that's I'm sure it's a crazy grind. I've noticed that I put out some threads earlier on Twitter that have been blowing up that it's just an incredibly rabid audience that's so excited to fill out their brackets and make bets. And it's just like a very condensed time period from Sunday until games lock on Thursday, where you have one of the most captive audiences, I think, in all of sports. It should be pretty exciting. Today, though, we're going to be breaking down the best bets of the tournament, plus a few futures bets. If you're looking for bracket advice, check out our last show from yesterday. This show will be posted on both the Move the Line and the Most Accurate Podcast feeds, because we know you all love betting, brackets, everything here. But before we get into it, I want to mention today's show is sponsored by our friends at Team Rankings. Their tools and analysis, I think, will help you dominate your March Madness pools. They allow you to plug in your own custom settings for how big of a tournament pool you're in, scoring system, and will produce an entire bracket for you that optimizes everything. Their brackets win over 200% more than expected since 2017. So you find the link in the show notes. Again, it's not just a product that we are partnered with. I legitimately use it. I think it's great work. So, it's awesome stuff there. But let's jump in. And you can start anywhere. I mean, I figure we'll touch on a couple bets here. Like, you just start with a bet that you really like and still think there's some value on the board right now.
Yeah, I mean, I've got to see where it's at. I haven't checked in the last like 30 minutes, so I don't know if lines have moved. But Drake had moved to the favorite role, but it was still at like 1.5.
Yeah.
I originally got it in before it moved to 1 when they were like – they were actually a slight dog to open Sunday night. So Monday I put it in Drake. When I got him at a slight plus number. I like this one for a couple of reasons. Against Washington State. And I say this, Drake broke my heart last year. I had him against Miami, and look what happened to Miami. So maybe you want to take Washington State. Because Drake, if you recall, that game was played on a Friday night. Drake had the lead most of the game. Drake had Miami on the ropes, and then Drake absolutely crapped it in the final like 2 or 3 minutes. And couldn't score. And Miami came back and beat them and then went to the Final Four. So this Drake team, veteran team, well-coached, they had a bit of a rough start when they had some players out and some of their worst results were back in November. So I tend to look, if teams are playing better and their worst games were bunched in November, I mean, before Thanksgiving, I know the committee likes to look at those games, but I'm more willing to forgive them and just say they got off to a rough start. At full health, this Drake team has been to the NCAA tournament. They're a good team. They're better than their number when you look at the power ratings for those reasons. Washington State faded a little bit at the end of the year. After they beat Arizona on the road in a big win, since then it's not been good. And they made a little lineup shift. They've been going a little smaller. And quite frankly, if they're going to continue that, their two-point field goal percentage defense is kind of plummeted. They've lost. I think they've lost like half their games down the stretch. So I think this is a team that isn't peaking, and I'm willing to take Drake. And then the final factor, Connor, this game's in Omaha. It's for us in the Midwest. That's a little two-hour drive across Des Moines to Omaha on I-80, whereas you're not getting there by car from Pullman, Washington. And so that's a bit of a travel, and it's a massive kind of travel advantage for Drake as the underdog. It's going to be a Drake heavy crowd, I think, in Omaha for this game.
Yeah, that's interesting. I've always wanted to look more into travel because obviously in NFL, there are certain times that travel definitely matters, especially when it's like West Coast playing in early games on the East Coast or traveling to London. If they travel later in the week, those teams tend to perform worse. You know, I know I'm putting you on the spot here now a little bit. Is there any like specific travel trends or rest trends or anything like that that off the top of your head?
Yeah, I don't want to misquote numbers. I don't want to misquote numbers. It's probably been a while. It's been a few years since I looked, but there definitely was a tendency for upsets to happen when the favorite had to travel farther. And obviously they aren't the favorite anymore, but it's kind of one of those big conference, small conference matchups. We used to see this all the time on the back in the day, Connor, when we would before we had four networks showing every game. If you remember, that we would always have the West Region 12-5 game at like 4 p.m. that you may or may not get on the local network, and you check in and it'd be an upset. It'd be like New Mexico State over Auburn or whoever coming from the East. And it happened all the time. So I do think there is the potential for a slight travel advantage. I'm not talking huge, but I do think it is an additional edge for Drake not to have to be in the same time zone and be where their fans are.
Yeah, no, that definitely makes a lot of sense there for sure. I'm going to go with a trend here for two bets that I like specifically, but we'll start with the first one. This is first half unders in the first round of the tournament. If you go back to 2011, my friend Dalton Cates did some great research here on this. It's hitting like close to 59% of the time, just blind betting every single first half under. And I think that's pretty interesting. We're talking about only 2 years in the last 10 where it's not been a net positive in terms of units bet. So overall, so I think that's pretty interesting. And so we're going to go here to two teams that play slow and play pretty good defense, with St. Mary's and Grand Canyon first half under 61.5 points. Again, it seems low, you know, 30 to 30, you know, 32-30 gets you over, but I'm looking at this under here. St. Mary's allowing only 26.5 first half points per game in the season, third best in the country. They're top 15 in defensive efficiency, and they play super slow, 358th in pace. And they get a Grand Canyon opponent who their adjusted number looks okay, 51st in adjusted defensive efficiency, but they're 10th in effective field goal rate allowed, which means they don't allow a lot of like easy shots, essentially. Like teams take tough shots against them. So that, I think, matters a lot and could translate to a St. Mary's team that isn't exactly like a super potent offense. And offensively, GCU, the Antelopes here, just 63rd in adjusted offense, 101st in effective field goal rate. So like even against their bad opponents, they weren't that good. Now they get a much, much better St. Mary's team. So I think, again, you factor some matchup analysis in with this trend because teams are fresh. They're playing in a new place. They're at a neutral, you know, standpoint here. Teams just tend to not shoot as well right off the bus in their first game. So I think that's kind of interesting. We're looking at 61 in DraftKings right now, 60.5 on FanDuel. As long as you're getting it over 60, I still think there's a little bit of value there. Any thoughts on like kind of that trend in general or St. Mary's or GCU here?
I mean, I think that some of the trend makes sense in this sense. You're in a tournament setting playing for your life. So I think people get tight. They're typically played in venues that those teams haven't played in. Sometimes they're not always, it's not like the conference tournaments always. Like if you were just in the Big 12 or the Big East tournament, the crowds are raucous. You may not have like a local crowd at all. It may be pretty dead in there. Maybe weird sight lines, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I think there's also an issue this year. I know the tournament's using different balls than a lot of teams have used in the regular season. You might Google that and see. I don't want to misquote what type of ball. But there's only like a handful of teams that have used this ball that's being used in the tournament. So who knows if the ball feels different. Like basically anything that contributes to feeling different probably disadvantages offense in basketball.
Yeah, no, totally agree. And there's just so many different things. At the end of the day, I mean, you're betting on kids who are like 18, 19, 20 years old. Like any small changes here, like these guys aren't professionals. Like they're obviously great athletes, but like they're not professionals. You know, they haven't been doing this forever. So any small changes with the ball, circadian rhythm, travel, anything like that that's different from them, I don't think that they're immediately just bound to recover. So yeah, I think a lot more ways that this goes under than over, but yeah, no, I appreciate your opinions there on that. That makes a lot of sense. I'm going to look into the ball. I do remember someone talking about it. It's like one's like stickier or something like that. So what's another bet that you're looking at though?
So another first round bets I'm looking at. I mean, one of the ones that popped to me right away and it's already moved down. Morehead State with the double digit points against Illinois. And the reasons for that are twofold. One's Illinois related. Teams like this, Illinois' profile, very offensive, excellent in KenPom in offense, poor in defense, and poor in defense while not turning people over, which I think is a bad combination in the tournament. We've seen teams like Ohio State lose to Oral Roberts, teams like you know, Iowa go on runs in the – so a lot of the Big Ten teams that have been very kind of like highly efficient on offense have shooters but can't really pressure the ball and create turnovers. When you get in the tournament, games get tight and you can't get stops and you don't pressure the ball, that creates opportunities for the underdog to hang around. And secondly, Morehead State plays at one of the slowest paces. So if this is a tight, slow game and Morehead State can control pace and Illinois doesn't turn Morehead State over, which that's one of Morehead State's weaknesses, but if Illinois doesn't exploit that, I think Morehead State can at least stick around and get under this number, if not threaten to win outright or put a little scare into Illinois for a while.
Ooh, sounds like you're sprinkling a little bit of the money line there as well. I mean, I feel like you have to, right? I did play the, it looks, we're looking at plus 12 at this point, open to plus 13 and a half. I mean, I think if you're above 10, I think it's kind of interesting. Again, like obviously fouling at the end of the game sucks. You can lose covers. I mean, you can get totally screwed. I guess that's part of the other reason I like first half unders as well, because you don't have a lot of that.
You don't deal with in the game fouling. You don't deal with the risk of overtime on the full game total.
Yeah. Oh man, absolutely nothing worse than going to overtime when you have a full game under or seeing like 30 points in the last minute just because of fouling and the other team still hitting their threes. I love the McNeese State play or Morehead State play. I definitely played that as well. It all adds up there. Great logic, I think. But we have a question here in the chat for tonight's game from Jeff. Thoughts on Colorado State versus Virginia tonight? Ooh. We're talking about, I mean, you want to get started with them? You got any big thoughts on Virginia or Colorado State here? Because I don't speak glowingly of either side, to be honest.
Yeah, exactly. And so here's – I'm not going to provide any, like, super great pearls of wisdom because I have this just, like, gut feeling. Like, I didn't think this Virginia team should be in the tournament. They are one of the worst offensive teams we've seen get in as an at-large. I mean, they showcase themselves in the ACC tournament by – luckily surviving against BC and then go into overtime, honestly, in a game they probably should have lost, although BC did hit the shot at the end. BC was leading most of that way. They controlled that game. And then they gave up the tough bank shot to NC State, but they let them stick around and let them in. And so I thought, I mean, they're one – like, even their wins, like, the committee will, like, distinguish others, but, like, when they beat A&M, Radford was out. I mean, there's all sorts of, like – even their best wins don't look like that great when you like really study them. They're just like completely, to me, mediocre team because of the offense. And all that said, they play great defense. They play slow. They grind you down. And I could see this team somehow frustrating us and going on a run while looking ugly, where they get to like the Sweet 16 unexpectedly, because quite frankly, they don't look like they should be there. I mean, I don't know. That's my thought on them. Colorado State has been highly efficient on offense, but their offense has struggled relatively down the stretch. So will they rebound? The shooting numbers have gone down for Colorado State. And I think sometimes teams that rely on shooting, as we talked about the unders, if like you rely on shooting and the shooting isn't there because the tournament's a little tougher and the nerves, teams that play defense, turn people over and rebound, have other things to fall back on. When your strength is shooting, sometimes that's a problem in the tournament if it's not going your way.
Yeah, no, that definitely makes sense here. I personally hope that you are wrong, because I don't want to watch Virginia play any more basketball than we have to. I mean, just pathetically boring stuff. They scored less than 50 points in multiple games this year. So it's not something I'm super interested in watching.
I'm going to hate watch it, probably.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to bet a first half under. The first half over under is like 55. I mean, I'm just not doing that. That's just, I can't.
Total, you know, like under 120 for the game.
Yeah, right. Like, I mean, and there's probably some value on the over here, but there's no shot that I'm betting the over in that game. Like, yeah, just can't do it. We have another bet here from, I think, Andy, friend of the show and Betsperts guy. Mm-hmm. He likes Joel Scott under 11.5 points. So if you want some action on the game, you know,
okay,
I guess,
there you go.
You know, again, if you're searching for action there, I think that's an interesting one for sure. I think you talked about your second one already, so I'll go to another. You know, I'll go with a team actually here. So I like Oregon money line outright against South Carolina. I think that's a fun one. We touched on it a little bit in the bracket show here, but I think I like Oregon's profile coming off a dominant run in the Pac-12 here. Wins over Arizona, wins over Colorado. They now draw a South Carolina team that, you know, plays slow. They're not amazing at anything. They were good, you know, in their conference, but I think that there's some holes with this squad here against an Oregon team that's playing better. They're well coached. So I think that this is just an interesting game here for Oregon that you're getting about even money at this point on the money line. So I think that that's pretty solid look here. And then on top of this, I also played them to make the Sweet 16 as one of my futures bets at plus 550 on DraftKings, plus 470 at FanDuel. Again, they have to win this game, and then they have to beat a Creighton team that profiles as a late bloomer, according to Ken Barkley, meaning they came on late. They have some holes. You know, I think they're a good team. They're, you know, equal, or they're, I guess, even in terms of offense and defensive efficiency. But it doesn't mean a team like Oregon can't give them a run. They'll probably come in as a couple point favorite or underdog, I'm sure. But again, plus 550 to get a win over a Creighton team, I think is interesting. Yeah. Any thoughts on Oregon or that those either of those bets?
Yeah, I think will they stay hot? Obviously.
Yep.
They weren't necessarily shooting lights out, other than, you know, Dante from the outside in the last couple games. But he has dominated inside. They survived early in the Pac-12, and then the last two games they basically avenged losses to Arizona and Colorado. They went 0-4 against those teams in the regular season. When they went 0-4 against them, those teams hit like 50% from three. That regressed to somewhat normal, and they were able to win these games. And so will they stay hot? You know, sometimes we see teams win these tournaments and they take some time off. That said, Altman's been a great tournament coach. He's put teams together that go on these runs, and we've seen these Pac-12 teams last year, the Pac-12, rest in peace, recently, where it's like, oh, the Pac-12 wasn't that good in the regular season, and then we've seen UCLA go to the Final Four, Oregon State to the Elite Eight. We've seen teams, them get in when people are like, man, they aren't that good because they don't do well in November or whatever. They didn't get the results, and then they go on these runs. And we've seen it out of Oregon. They went to the Sweet 16 as a 12 seed, I believe, like 5 years ago, maybe the 2019 tournament, and also blasted Iowa a couple years ago with the team with Luka Garza. And so Altman's done well in the tournament. He coaches to, I think, maximize what he has, and he's had to do that with all the injuries. But maybe they're hitting their stride and have overcome. They're a great story. Overcoming the injuries they have to be in this tournament is amazing.
Yeah, that's always the give and take, right? It's like every year we see teams get hot in the conference tournament, dominate, and then lose in the first round. Every year we also see teams get hot at the right time and then just keep getting hot. You know, it's like with that give and take that I never know really which side it's going to be here. But if we want to stay in some interesting kind of futures looks here, I have a question on how you approach the market here specifically. So obviously DraftKings, FanDuel, all these different books, they offer the ability to bet on a team to reach the Sweet 16, to beat the, to reach the Elite Eight, to win the region, you know, finals, et cetera, et cetera. Do you generally bet the futures and just forget about it? Or do you try and like roll over the money line? So for example, you can, instead of betting Oregon Sweet 16, I can bet Oregon money line this time, take all that money and then bet them again, money line against Creighton, likely Creighton, the game after. You're probably gaining more value there by doing that if Creighton wins, but you're also sacrificing a ton of value if somehow Creighton loses. So like, do you have a specific approach? Is it team-based? Is it bracket-based? How do you look at that?
I think it's a case-by-case base. And a lot of – actually, some of the ones I like to do recently, I like to dabble in getting plus money on one of the top seeds to not make. You can get like two-way markets, miss Sweet 16 – and I think so in brackets, I'm probably not picking those upsets because I don't want to, because I'm right. Because here's the thing. I always pick the wrong team to upset. I'm better at identifying the vulnerable teams that I'm like, okay, I think they have some vulnerabilities, than actually picking the correct team that will beat them sometimes. And so like I played Purdue to miss last year, the Sweet 16. I did not think it would be Farley Dickson.
First round, right?
FAU or Memphis, either one they drew, their guards would give them problems with turnovers. And I thought that was a tougher second round matchup. And so a lot of times people, I think, overestimate how likely these ones and twos are to win, especially the twos, although they're a little more balanced this year, how like the other wins. So I actually like, for example, Houston to miss. It's at a bigger number. I think it's in the 300s. But that's because I like both Nebraska and A&M as teams on the rise. And I think whichever one does win that game, and it wouldn't surprise me whoever it was. So I rather than bet which one it'll be, I'd rather play the miss on Houston and take the risk the upset happens. And I'm comfortable with whoever pulls it. But I did that 2 years ago with Baylor. I did Baylor to miss the year that North Carolina was the 8th seed. And then once North Carolina was facing him, I also took North Carolina because I was that I like had a feel like I liked the matchup once it happened, once it was set. So I actually took both and survived in overtime because it, if you remember, they blew the big lead. Like it was looking awesome. Yep. And like Baylor came all the way back and then North Carolina won and then they went to the final. And so that's how I like to think about those. I like to play some of those, which is different than a lot of people. I know most people are like this team to make. I like to like figure out which teams to maybe fade on a two-way market.
So I know that this is going to sound ridiculous and probably a little bit degenerate, but did you know on FanDuel, you can take those no's and parlay them?
I did not. No.
So you can parlay like Florida Atlantic to not make the Elite Eight at like minus 4,000, plus Duquesne, plus Dayton, plus Mississippi State, all it knows to now get like, you know, a normal price on something. Is that the most ridiculous thing you've ever heard? I mean, I might have to look into this now because I feel like there's some teams that like maybe they win one game, maybe they win two games, but like are they really going to win three games? Like, you know,
always
I don't know.
You never know. Yeah, you're going to be the guy like the guys posted. I took Purdue money line against Fairleigh Dickinson.
Oh, was it Fezzik? Yeah, Fezzik. You know, what a legend. I mean, it's like hilarious. He still posts like minus 4,000 money lines because he says it should be like minus 5,000 or whatever, which is like the ultimate, you know, numbers play of like, well, there's X expected value because I make the number this and the number's this, so I got to play it.
The variance in his model, I think, for these outlier events.
Yeah. It's that, you know, I can't get there. I generally don't play heavy money lines, anything like that, but I'll probably dabble with some of this. Yeah. We'll see. Who knows?
I like to play in like the plus 150 to plus, say, 400 range. Some people like longer shots. I like to take those kind of events.
Yeah, the smaller to middle ones. Awesome. Well, okay, so I guess before we hop off here, we talked a little bit yesterday about maybe some Cinderellas or sleepers, like any team they're interested in potentially making a run. I can tell you the odds of, you know, of Elite Eight, Region Winner, Final, Sweet 16, whatever you're looking at, if you don't have that on hand. But I'm curious, like, any teams that you love their draw, you think that they can win maybe two games? You know, that's probably what we're looking at to really cash a bet here. Anyone off the top of your head here?
I mean, I don't know if it's a value anymore. New Mexico's really got a shot to come out of that region. Baylor's defense isn't great. That'll be a shootout. If New Mexico beats Clemson, that Baylor-Mexico game will be fantastic. And it'll be
– and we're looking at 22-1 to win the region.
That's a bit longer, but you know what? My opinion of the West was if something crazy is going to happen, this is the region most likely to give us like a Florida Atlantic type run, a Loyola Chicago type run, just on like how balanced this region is and how many of the teams seated, let's say, below like the 5 line, I think at least have a shot.
Yeah, for sure. You're looking at New Mexico plus 240 to reach the Sweet 16, 8-1 to reach the Elite Eight, and then 22-1 to win the region. I don't mind that. I think I was looking at your guys' data that they're like way, way more likely to advance than public pick percentage right now as well in brackets.
Oh, for sure. The public sees the 6-11, definitely in bracket play. I don't think the average bracket picker is as sharp on where New Mexico is. The betting market mostly, I mean, they're the favorite for a reason. Their metrics show they're a little better. I mean, this Clemson team I thought was playing better. When they've had Jack Clark in the lineup, when they've been at full health, and then they did what they did in the ACC tournament. And I was like, what was that? I mean, it was a head scratching performance that was concerning. New Mexico on the rise. Probably, I don't like a lot of the Mountain West teams. And I think so. I'm with the committee on seeding some of them down, but yep. Mexico, I would have been the one. They actually ran through it for the tournament. They beat San Diego State, who the committee put as a 5. I mean, they're on par with San Diego State, as they showed. And they're a 5. And so I think you're getting great value for people that aren't paying attention. Now, whether it's quite as good in the betting markets, but I think they're still a good shot.
Yeah, I mean, and they're playing, I think, what most people consider to be like an overseeded team as well. You know, just given that, I mean, they played in a good conference, but, you know, I don't really think that they were necessarily warranting a six seed there. And that's reflected in the betting markets. And even, I mean, KenPom has New Mexico 23rd, Clemson 34th. They have a 2-point win projected for New Mexico. So again, the spread's two, so they're not getting a ton of value there. But I think the futures market's an interesting way to play it, as you laid out there. That yeah, makes
I think they play a style sense. That I think can travel well in a tournament. Guard oriented, but can turn people over and can, you know, if you can create turnovers in the tournament as you try to make a run, I think you've got a chance.
Yeah, no, definitely. Love that. And the last bit that I will leave you guys with, and one of my betting tips for the tournaments relating to player props, is betting points, rebounds, and assist unders. And so one of the things that I've been doing, I can't get very much down on this on DraftKings anymore. So if you're looking for account preservation, this is not something to do. If you're a square bettor, and you want to look to find an edge here, these are really good, because the way they do that is obviously they offer a points prop, a rebounds prop, an assist prop. They take all those, they add them up, and they usually add like an extra one or two. The issue is that they're almost like work against each other in a lot of ways, especially the points and the assists. If you're not scoring, or if you're scoring, you're not having an assist. If you're making an assist, you're not scoring. If you get in foul trouble, I mean, you basically have no shot of hitting that because you're missing all three opportunities for all three. And I don't think that... Like, I don't think that these projections are right. Like, I straight up, I was just hammering unders on PRAs for a while, and then I can bet like $14 on them now. So it's not even worth my time doing research.
Yeah, the foul trouble, particularly because if you're used to the NBA, the extra, like the fifth foul is the sixth. I mean, you get guys that literally coaches, they get two in the first 5 minutes. They don't come back in the first half.
They
sit them. And that's what happens all the time. That's why you see quite broad minute distributions from game to game for players.
Yeah. And it's like, I mean, you can look at guys where we'll have a, you know, some of the projections that I see, we'll have a discount on, you know, the under on the rebounds and the points, and then they'll end up going over the rebounds, but you know, they only have 4 points. So it's like, they can't even hit 20 PRA with four points and even 12 rebounds. So it's one of those things that, you know, if you're looking to get into the prop market, I think it's pretty interesting. One of the things that I've noticed specifically, I will be at the DraftKings Sportsbook on Thursday in Chicago, manually feeding the kiosk so I can get down on these, but you know, the app's not working too well. But Jason, any, you know, I guess any last things here to wrap it up? And if not, feel free to plug what you got going on for the rest of the week, man. We made it through this.
No, we'll get to find out where we're wrong on everything come Thursday. excited for it. It should be a fun tournament. I will say, I don't think I'm going to go out on a limb. It's not going to be as crazy as last year. Last year was historic. I do think we're going to see some top seeds advance deeply. There may be one surprise run to the Final Four, but I think it's going to be more like a typical year where you have 1-7 maybe slipping through, or 1-11. Or something like that, or an 8 that knocks off the 1 and goes on a run, but not like all four regions. But I will be excited to see that. I'm excited to look at like the specialty props once we get into it. I've had success betting the over on seeds for the Final Four the last 2 years. Ooh. I'm wondering if the number will be sharper this year, because I was able to get it like at a number that it clinched by the Elite Eight both years in the last two. So, but I haven't seen that number yet. I'm going to go look for it, see if anybody's offered it.
Yeah, I mean, I filled out my first bracket and had 3-1 seeds and a 2 seed. I feel like a complete square, but I just think it's one of those years. I think there's a couple of good 1 seeds and 1 and 2 seeds. So we'll see. Probably less variance than last year, where there was multiple double-digit seeds, and you know, UConn was a 4 seed, I think, last year, in a pretty, not similar, but interesting spot, kind of like what Auburn's in right now in terms of ranking and in terms of where they're at. But obviously, they do have to face UConn there in probably the Sweet 16. So pretty big roadblock on their way to the final four. But overall, I think this was great. You know, appreciate you coming on here. You can,
thank you.
Yeah. You can find all of Jason's stuff over at Team Rankings and Pool Genius. You know, link in the show notes there. And if you want my official bets, you can go to 444.com/plans. I have my article up already there, where I have 5 or 6 bets, and I'll probably be releasing a couple more here in the coming days. So appreciate you guys all listening. For Jason, I'm Tony. We will talk soon.